count my numbers.
Hey, it's us folks at Taking It Down again. I'm the host and editor-in-chief of the website The Alabama Take. My name's Blaine Duncan. With some help in a second, I'll bring you some ideas and thoughts on pop culture, particularly the newly released movie Nomadland, which is now streaming on Hulu, and the Danish HBO show The Investigation. You can find that on HBO or HBO Max as well. Plus, it's not too odd for us to begin the show with odds and ends. And today we've got an announcement for you in the break that you'll definitely want to hear. We do have this a podcast announcement, so it's called This Song Sucks. Stick around for the break and we'll play you the trailer for that. Joining me as always are my comrades. We've got Mr. Adam Morrow, still digging his way out of snow, and Mr. Donovan Runwald in the tropical paradise of Connecticut.
It's true, the sun came out and all the snow melted today.
You have no snow on the ground right now?
No, I have no snow on my car right now.
No, this is awful.
Big difference.
This is awful. Let me tell you, this is we record on Sundays. We mentioned that on the program before. The temperature went below freezing 9 days ago, and it just crept back up. Where there's sunshine today, so hopefully the snow is melting. But let me tell you, Donovan, you've lived here. We are not prepared for. There was like 8 inches of accumulation in my yard this week, just unrelenting. It's still my backyard covered in snow back there.
You found out every drafty corner in your house this week?
We built little forts over them, yeah. Man, when I woke up one morning, it was -8, like the feels like. It was just absurd. Like praying for as I texted Donovan and I said, Donovan, who is the patron saint of water pipes to keep everything from freezing? And he reminded me that, of course, that's Saint Mario. So fortunately, we made it through the week unscathed. But man, it's just, that was too much for Alabama.
On the bright side, though, your senator is not Ted Cruz.
But that's a coin that's quickly come and flipping the other way. You know what I mean? It's like,
but our senator is old Tubbs, so at least we don't have a scaled power system like Texas. I'm not going to be paying $5,000 for keeping my pipes unfrozen.
Jeez, something I heard a couple weeks back is that every system is perfectly designed to get the outcome that it gets, which yeah. I was thinking a lot about Texas, like, you know, people are like, what's wrong? And it's like, no, the system is working. Like
it's working.
People
perfectly.
Are making money. Yeah. It's working the way it's designed to work. You're just getting screwed.
Yeah. No question about it. But we were to keep it Alabama centric. It's so odd to me, Blaine. I feel like you are basically due east of me. It's south a bit, but
a bit.
You didn't get any snow, and we're still digging out up here. I mean,
that's wild.
Part of the lake.
We got the one day.
You got one day.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the lake froze over here. That's crazy.
Wow.
You just don't.
That really
that
is crazy.
Yeah, we'll have that with like places 20 minutes from us. Like they'll get snow and we won't. Just with different elevations and it really makes a difference.
Let me tell you, the snow. You know, we got ice first, and there was about 1.5 to 2 inches on the ground. And then we were already locked in. You know, we hadn't left home since Sunday. And then Wednesday night, it was as the challenge was really cooking, the snow really started falling. That was a sensory overload. I just had to just sleep that off. That was too much at once.
It was the thin layer of ice laid down and then snow on top of it is the same scenario that affected us about, 8 years ago? And it was even over in Atlanta where cars were abandoned on the interstate.
Fortunately, this time, I think everybody, it was just so cold for 2 days beforehand. Everybody knew it was coming. And
right. Yeah, because everyone was out and about the last time.
Right.
It caught
it just happened so fast. You really only got in trouble this go around here if you tried to leave home.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that previous one happened at rush hour. So everyone was trying to get home.
Yeah, it was terrible.
And the South's not prepared for it. So,
just not. You know, every time that I hear people make fun of us down here, I think of reading that Chicago schools had to close because it's too hot. You know, things like that. It's like, well, you know, you.
Yeah, it's the same thing, right? Like if you bought an air conditioning unit for like all your schools, wherever, like your taxpayers would be like, what's wrong with you? Same thing if like Florence, Alabama was like, all right, we're buying a snowplow.
Yeah, just not.
We'll use it every 10 years.
After this week, they might accept that.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of cold weather, let's dive into the show a little. The investigation is in Denmark, so I imagine that's a cold place. Adam, you've been to Denmark?
I have been to Denmark.
Did you go to Copenhagen?
I have played Copenhagen before.
That's right.
So what's it like over there, in Denmark specifically? Not just Europe, but Denmark especially.
Unfortunately, that was the... I'll give you the short version. We played in Berlin one day, maybe on a Saturday, and then played Copenhagen Sunday night, and then played Oslo, I guess, I don't remember what the days were, but it was 3 days, and that is so much driving.
Yeah. A whirlwind.
A whirlwind. But interestingly, we, you know, you drive basically from Berlin to the top of Germany and get on a boat, a big ferry, and go across this. I mean, you're like out in open water, can't see land. And then you're all of a sudden in Scandinavia. You're in Denmark. So it was interesting to travel around that area. I thought this is vibing pretty well for it. I mean, we got to explore Copenhagen a bit, and this captures it felt familiar in a way, the little time that I spent there.
What's the vibe there?
It's funny to have watched this show this week when it was so cold here, and obviously we aren't prepared for it. And mm-hmm. I'm not comparing the level of cold, but the long dark days. Not that the show is happening in late summer, so they're not quite into that. But it's fascinating to me that people have carved out these beautiful cities, and I'm talking about it like they live in the North Pole or something. But it's a very different landscape than we're used to. Very beautiful landscape. I mean, you think mountains and stuff, but this area is flat. You know, it's along the coast. I'm trying to... The show made me think of... there's a program that got a lot of attention in Europe that was about a crime that was committed on the bridge between Sweden and Denmark.
Was it called The Bridge?
Was it just The Bridge? And there was like arguments over jurisdiction, and you kind of even see that in the investigation a bit.
They tried to remake that, I think, for FX, which with... And I think it was just called The Bridge, and it was on the Mexican border with the United States. It was good for about three episodes, and then
interesting border because it's just, I mean, it's a giant bridge. It goes forever. It's like, I think comparable to the South would be like I-10 through Louisiana or some of these big intercoastal waterway bridges, that kind of thing. But yeah, you drive, and like you do stop and check, but it's not like going from the U.S. into Mexico, so. The spirit of cooperation has to be pretty strong there.
I will admit that I had to look at a map because I was like, I'm kind of geographically challenged already. And I'm pretty sure that like my mental picture of Denmark is actually the Netherlands. Like if you put a gun to my head and were like, point at Denmark, I'd be pointing right at Holland and be dead. So I had to look at it. I did not realize that you can literally, when they were talking about the coordination with the Swedes and everything, that like you can drive from Copenhagen to Malmo or however you say it. And like, so to all those who are also confused out there, if you look at a map, things make a lot more sense. Or you're probably smart and you already know it.
No, I pulled up a map too. I don't think I ever realized, and this is really stupid, that Denmark borders Germany.
Well, yeah.
I thought there might be a country in between them.
How do you think? Are we recording?
Yes, we are. All right. We have been.
Oh God, really?
How do you think they got? How do you think they got Anne Frank?
What you're thinking of the Netherlands again, Donovan?
Damn it, I am, aren't I?
Yeah, she was in Amsterdam, man.
Yeah, you're right. But no, I think didn't Denmark the Royal Navy scuttled their ships? But I think that country was actually they were actually able to get most of the Jewish folks out.
That's good.
I think they were able to evacuate most of them to Sweden before. So what happened in other parts of the world, I don't think happened there. Not as badly, I mean, because they were able to get folks out. I may be incorrect about that.
They have a we're getting way off topic here, but like Norway has a fairly complex history with the Nazis.
Yeah.
How many sympathizers were up there? Obviously, they weren't really feeling the brunt of World War II, but interesting to start reading up there, especially going from Western Europe where it's like, obviously everyone is against, to why not just try to survive up there in the snow?
Yeah.
Yeah, and going even further back, coincidentally, I'm also in the middle of reading Hamlet. So,
speaking of Denmark, is that any good?
That's top notch stuff. Speaking of top notch stuff, I have the opinion that the investigation was good. Let's brief everyone on it in case they want to see it and have it, and then we'll spoil some things.
In case this conversation hasn't just been like,
yeah,
nails on a chalkboard.
I'm turning it off right now.
Like watching snow melt, which is what I'm doing right now.
The Investigation is a show on HBO. You can catch it on HBO Max. It's Danish, obviously. We've been talking about that. It's based on the actual murder of a journalist. So it's vibing on true crime. But the less you know going in, maybe the better. That I went in fairly blind. So by the time our episode drops, 4 episodes of The Investigation will have aired. I personally have watched 2 thus far. I think Adam watched 2 and Donovan watched 1. So we'll really only cover the first episode, and maybe that will be spoiler free enough if you're interested. But before we get into any spoilers at all, I will say it's about Copenhagen's homicide unit trying to solve a mystery of the possible death of a journalist. It's got a heavy focus on the lead investigator, and we are going to butcher these names. I am. But the lead investigator is a man named Jens Møller, who's played by Søren Molling, I'm guessing. The show's noted really for its authenticity. A lot of reviews will note this in the headline even. But it also stars the gentleman who played Euron Greyjoy, if you're a Game of Thrones fan.
As Euron Greyjoy, which is really weird in the context of the show.
Truly. I think he'd be the most recognizable face in the cast to American audiences, maybe the only recognizable face. That actor's name is Pilu Asbæk, maybe?
This is the show where I learned that that guy's Danish, so.
Oh, you didn't already know that?
I did not know that.
Well, for sure. I knew that while I watched Game of Thrones.
Oh, okay. I did not.
But I didn't. I hadn't seen him in anything. So let's just go around with general thoughts, and then we'll put a spoiler warning up for the first episode, at least. Adam, what did you think about The Investigation?
The theme of our show today is slow TV. And this is...
for sure,
this
yeah.
Is, I love shows like this. This was right up my alley. I didn't Google it, didn't do anything. When you suggested, you said, hey, I've been watching this thing. And then later you said it's a Danish kind of slow vibey thing. In. No more details needed. I'm in. And it lived up to that expectation of a strong sense of landscape and place and all of these things. So I'm in. I loved it.
Thumbs up for me. I thought the fellow that plays the Jens, the lead investigator, I found him very compelling. Maybe I just like those glasses. Like it had good mood without being moody, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I liked, yeah, you know, Adam said sense of place. I did feel it had that. Something I was I was kind of thinking as I was watching is like, oh, I can tell this is made for Danish people in Denmark, because as they're going through beautiful Copenhagen, they never pull the camera out really. They're focusing on the investigators. It's like, right, because it's not a travel show. This is for the
right.
Danish.
They're not, there's no like cityscape shots or anything really.
I will say, I found it. I mean, what, you know, starting out a show, what can you say other than like, I wasn't bored. I was intrigued, and I found it compelling.
Yeah, as did I. Right here, I think we'll put a little bit of spoiler stuff in. So if you're captivated by the description so far, then by all means, go watch it. You know, they don't do the establishing shots hardly at all, and that sort of fits with their motif of solely focusing on the investigative unit. And there's been articles online that have noted this, so I'm kind of stealing from that. But I think I would have picked up on it as well. They don't even mention the accused by name, ever.
Or I thought it very striking, at least in the first episode, that you do not see him.
No, you don't see him. And you don't see him in, well, a little bit of a spoiler for you, Donovan. Then you don't see him 2 episodes in either.
So. I'm not surprised. I just thought, like, how different, you know, like, if this is, like, many American TV shows or other shows we've seen, right? This, right? Like, you've got Jared Leto playing the sneering suspect or something like that, right? It's the suspect show, too.
Yes, but this, in this case, it is not. It is, the title is exactly what you get. It is about the investigation, very procedural. And you're talking about that John Zamalar boy. He plays this with a certain solemnity, right? A very quiet performance. He doesn't do a lot of chuckling. There's not a lot of nudging his cohorts.
I don't know. You know, that kind of performance, I think it's almost hard to talk about because it is understated. I found it magnetic. Like, I want, when he was on the screen, I wanted to see what he was going to do. And so often what he's doing is hearing and thinking. And he's got kind of one of those faces that he seems to know how to use it, so that you're always kind of like, what's going on in there, right? Like, even if nothing's really going on, he gives the impression of kind of internal drama.
The opening scene, the only other thing that I knew going in was that Euron is in it. And the scene where he is making his case, I thought, well, is this what this show is about? This accused murderer. You really had everything set up, right? You had the star actor who we recognize. Mm-hmm. You have an accused. You have an aggrieved. You have this whole thing set up to kind of check all the boxes, like you're talking about, Donovan. And our guy is not really the main focus of that scene. And then it pulls out and you realize, oh, this is what they're doing. This is the case that got away that's now going to inform possibly what happens next. Or maybe it's just setting the stage. But you're right. It didn't take long to figure out this is the guy that you're riding with. That Euron is kind of a secondary character. I mean, I'm sure he comes more into play as the season goes along and they try to bring charges. But the way they did that, and then two, the way that they started to introduce the case. Blaine, you said you didn't really know much about this case. Donovan, do you remember when this was happening?
So I did not, as it was going on, as I was watching the show, I was like, doesn't ring a bell, doesn't ring a bell. And then the fateful words, homemade submarine, came into the equation. I was like, I do kind of remember that. Like that. Because
you described that phrase as
bone chilling. Like, are there any scarier words in the English language than homemade submarine?
Look, man, you're going to have to drug me and tie me up to get me into a real submarine.
Like, of course he's I do sort of remember this when it was going on, because it sounds like, you know, I don't know, like B-level supervillain shit. Like, oh, he lured her out in his homemade submarine to.
I don't remember anything about this case, so I'm going to be entranced going forward about the twist and turns that Adam alluded to in a text message with me. He said that there's some twist and turns.
Yeah, I really don't. The only thing is, like, as soon as they said homemade submarine, I'm like, yep, I remember that.
How does one begin to make a homemade submarine?
There's a lot of questions, aren't there?
A lot of welding?
A lot of welding.
Because
I think
it was huge.
It's huge. This guy, you said, like a B-level.
I was expecting a two-seater.
Yeah. A B-level superhero or supervillain. He's kind of like a poor man's Elon Musk or something. You know what I mean? He surely had some money.
Like in real life, this is.
I don't know. It just, when this first went down, it's like, this sounds like something that Elon Musk would do, right?
Yes.
Only like
murder someone.
No, yeah. Not murder someone. Like, when the only details were, there's this guy that this journalist was going to interview in a homemade submarine. You're like, oh, that's very. Musk or any of these like eccentric rich people who have decided to use their money to do these very odd things. Just to, I'm not implying that Elon Musk is going to murder someone in a submarine or anything.
I am.
What I think Adam is implying is that Elon Musk has already murdered someone.
Yeah, right.
That too. Listen, let's just get down to the bare bones. Elon Musk is a creepy dude.
When you murder someone, does that make your brain weird? Is that what's wrong with him?
Maybe.
What comes first, right? Is your brain?
Do you think that Elon Musk, like, could be slotted into NBC's Hannibal, do no acting, and get an Emmy?
100%.
I'm having a normal day at the office, and then he wins an Emmy.
Yeah, 100%.
Because he eats Hannibal.
Adam, what year did this case take place?
I think 2016.
I know not very little. I know nothing about this. I honestly do not remember it. I don't know why. Maybe I was tuned out of the news.
I don't think anything else was happening in 2016. So
nothing.
I think it was 2016.
I just remember 16 or 17, I think.
I think it was 17. I just remember the homemade sub stuck out, and then that initial, you know, even in the first episode, there's confusion, like a boyfriend is introduced. Or
yes.
not on screen, but like the idea there is a boyfriend and you don't know if he's involved somehow. And it's just very like head spinning when they first present all these. And that's how it felt watching the news build up. And as they tried to charge people, and like I thought in the show, it was very interesting. I guess you saw some Danish law in practice that they had to charge him with this more serious crime to keep him at all. And just subtle differences to how a procedural would work. If it was based here. I just remember I've intentionally not gone and read the Wikipedia page. There is one for this.
Me too.
Because I kind of remember point A and point B, but I don't remember how they got from one to the other because this did all unfold in the media.
Donovan, did you find it hard to understand their language? I understood okay when they would say that.
It was kind of like, you know how when you're watching the Muppet Show or whatever, and like the Swedish mm-hmm. chef is doing his thing?
Very racist, yeah.
Well, like maybe you don't understand the words, but because of the broad, exaggerated mm-hmm. hand gestures, mm-hmm. almost like, you know, that's how you get it. Like if it reminded me of watching a Fellini film, you know, like I don't speak Italian, but when you're watching Fellini, a guy in a mustache comes up and he's like, hey, it's me, Italiano man.
Also racist, but okay.
You know, it's a universal language.
Really milking the racism today.
But when
John Mueller would say something about a coffee, you would pick up on it because he would pour a coffee.
Yeah.
Can we talk about the coffee machine? Is this going to be a point?
I would love to talk about the coffee machine. The damn coffee machine was broken in episode 2. I think he's lying. I think he's lying about that because that coffee machine was humming.
Y'all were chattering about that coffee machine, and I was watching this with my wife, and it came onto the screen, right? And I said, oh, damn. And Beth said, what? Like, what is going – like, I said out loud, like, that's a fine coffee machine.
She thought there was a clue drop.
She thought something big had happened, and it had. She just didn't – she doesn't
have the context.
That.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the investigation, I think we all recommended it, is a very solemn, quiet show. It's not your usual crime thriller. It really breaks down the steps, which is, you know, Adam mentioned it, there are some subtle differences between Danish law and American law. So nothing's ever confusing. So I definitely am looking forward to, I may even dive into that third episode as soon as we finish recording. I'm pretty interested in everything that's going on.
I'm way into it. I think just briefly, the cast of characters, the actors are all very strong. The perspectives are interesting. Like I thought the guy who seems to be in charge of the dive crew that's been tasked mm-hmm. with, they never really show the expanse of water that they're talking about until, little spoiler here for you, Donovan, they break down how they're going to search the bottom of the ocean mm-hmm. for a body.
Ah, sure. That's cool.
And it's like this, you know, Sisyphean task that because they have to do it, but because they don't have any strong leads, I mean, it's this massive area. All of that stuff is interesting. And getting the submarine out of the water, like the difficult, mm-hmm. they took a long time, like yeah. showing how difficult that was. And
that
it was even kind of
cool.
tense on the boat, right? Like they kept showing wires, like is something going to break? Like what's going to happen here? The whole show is, the attention to detail is so good. And the drama is maybe not even going to be, obviously it's a character focused show, but like with the daughter coming to tell him that she's pregnant and him, Jan's kind of not, he kind of
dropped,
got to take the call, kind of dropping the ball there. Mm-hmm. I think mm-hmm. the level of depth that everything is being given is going to be super mm-hmm. rewarding to watch.
And I think it's only 6 episodes, if I'm not mistaken. So
perfect.
It's a perfect, yeah, nice chunk of television.
The woman who, my last impression is, the woman who is kind of like his lieutenant, his right-hand man,
Yes.
Not really, but kind of looks like Holly Hunter. So every time it snaps to her, I'm like, why the hell is Holly Hunter in this show?
She does bear a strong resemblance to her, and she's really good.
She's great.
I love how all the actors are very normal looking, except for the Euron Greyjoy guy. You know, he's got that, that rugged handsomeness, but
he's a hot shot prosecutor.
Yeah.
That makes
everybody
sense,
looks very normal.
I love the glasses that Jens is wearing with their really thick lenses and make his eyes kind of big and watery. Kind of makes him look a little goggle-eyed, which I think adds to the whoever did the costuming for that was
the
normalcy of
Well, and like having him with someone who's obviously not his first wife or the mother of his daughter, you know, and they're like just moving into this building. All those choices were interesting to me. Like the home is like surrounded by moving boxes and he goes shooting. That's one of the first things that happens. It's just like there's this whole interesting
skeet shooting.
Yeah.
My last note, I always think it's funny, like what's being translated, right? There's a bit where he in the show says, ha ha ha. And they choose to put into subtitles. Very funny.
I could have just put ha ha ha.
I'm like, you could say, I get what ha 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 means.
All right, Adam, we're going to run an ad in a bit for a new project from the Alabama Take, and you're involved with it to some degree, varying degrees, I suppose. The ad will probably give you everything you need to know, but you got any insight on This Song Sucks, a podcast from the Alabama Take?
A little inside baseball?
Maybe even tease us with what the first episode's about? Maybe we could do that.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure which. I think I know, but I'm not going to speak out of turn on what song it is. I'll just say that... this is the brainchild of just two people who could hold their own at the haters ball. Josh Kavanaugh and Hayden Crawford. And
they've got standing invites.
They do. They have done a very funny job. And it's funny. Josh is, he's kind of become the research man, and Hayden has become the demented research man. And I jump in every now and again on the episodes that I'm on. It's, you know, it started out as I think for them, like a way to rip on songs and have fun together. But Josh has unearthed some, I mean, Blaine, you did an episode. You saw how it works. I feel like you can, whether you hate or love a song, you can listen to it if you're a fan of music and probably get something out of it.
I really look forward to doing some songs or for their podcast to do some songs that people actually like. Because I think the first episode, no reveals here, but I think the first episode is one everyone's going to unanimously agree, yeah, this song does suck pretty badly.
There's the ones that I am on, to some degree, I think the songs, maybe except for one or two, actually kind of rule, or the artist has done something. It's everything from like pop songs that are probably objectively bad, but I still find enjoyable to...
Okay.
Like a band's...
I didn't know it was going to be that.
I think the best ones are maybe things that we grew up with that we understand now are not great, but also in doing the research listening, you find yourself 2 hours later down a rabbit hole of having fun. So,
did you see your life taking you to podcast regular?
No, and I'm trying to run as far away from it as possible.
As he says on...
The 30-something white males do not need to spend more time podcasting. That's not what the world needs.
Hey, you're right. 40-something
white. give it to you.
Let's go into our break, and we'll run that ad, and maybe you hear something you like from This Song Sucks, an Alabama Tape podcast that's coming soon. Thanks for listening. If you're up for it, do us a favor. Find us on your podcast app, rate us, review us, and tell a friend about us. That will help. If you're messing around on the site, thealabamatake.com, you can always click on shop and find the link to our Tee Public store, where you can find all of your Alabama Take and Taking It Down needs. Now we have a special announcement coming from the Alabama Take Family Podcast. Here it comes, the ad. Check it out.
Coming soon to a podcast app near you. This song sucks! Are you tired of all those other podcasts that wax poetic about the music that they love? Well, you won't get any of that shit here.
What a steaming pile of garbage that song is.
The concept is simple. Three musician pals get together and talk about the music that they hate.
Rockabilly's fine, but this is sort of...
Is it? Are we going to give rockabilly a pass this early in the show's existence?
Yeah, that album cover's about as hip-hop as a bowl of mashed potatoes.
We'll talk about the music.
I mean, Before These Crowded Streets is really their Kid A. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The first change is from C to B flat. He makes no attempt to make it look like his fingers are playing the chord.
Really, in this day and age, who can be bothered by a B flat?
We'll talk about the lyrics.
Strangulation, altercation, oral sex, and bird migration.
Bird migration.
And of course, we'll talk about the artists themselves.
Sorry, I'm just imagining him in a mirror in the basement alone in like a house robe, scatting with a martini in his hand, like practicing scatting in the mirror. I'd fuck me. What is Lou's strudel filling of choice?
Raspberry?
Raspberry.
Apple.
Apple.
Cherry?
Now we're talking.
Yeah.
Brought to you by the Alabama Take, This Song Sucks. Available soon wherever you get your podcasts.
The trumpet.
Okay, so we're back from the break. Hopefully that ad got you interested. It either did one thing, it got you interested, or you were absolutely putting yourself as far away from that podcast as you can. I think that's the way it's going to go.
That's kind of how Josh and Hayden go, so it makes perfect.
It is. And they'll. I think they both will admit it.
Yeah.
We're about to talk about the film Nomadland, which is now airing on Hulu. Which I found very interesting. I don't think that announcement came until like 2 weeks ago.
Was it shown at Sundance? It was shown somewhere. Yeah. Where people were watching it. They were like, whoa. And then Hulu either acquired it or announced that they were dropping it very, very quickly. Yeah. After that.
I guess the people behind it figured out that they getting a lot of attention in a theatrical release was going to be hard, much like what Warner Brothers is doing with HBO Max. So they probably shopped it around, or maybe Hulu saw it as a good opportunity to have a feature on their streaming service. But yeah, it debuted in the theaters this most recent Friday and also on Hulu. So I was really happy to find that out. So it had a release on the streaming service Hulu, and it coincided with the limited theatrical release. This movie is directed by Chloe Zhao, who will also, this is the most interesting thing about my notes before we get into the actual movie itself. She's also going to be directing the MCU movie, The Eternals. So while I was watching Nomadland, I would have an occasional thought of, what is she going to do with an MCU movie?
That's fascinating.
It's truly fascinating. It's to the point where I thought about it often during Nomadland, but it's just a crazy jump. So Nomadland mainly stars Frances McDormand and David Strahan. Other people featured in various roles aren't actors, from my understanding. A quick summary before we get into any kind of spoiler. It's a movie about Frances McDormand's character, Fern, who's taking up wandering and working through the American West after being hit by the Great Recession. The plant she had worked at in Nevada shut down. So her life there is not only done, but so is her work. And she just takes off. Pretty soon we're going to discuss with spoilers, but let's do what we kind of do usually, is just overall quick thought ideas on the movie or feelings about the movie. So Adam, what'd you think?
I thought it was great. Again, we're on this slow TV topic this week. It had its moments feeling like, it kind of reminded me of the Florida Project a bit, with bringing in untrained actors. Apparently the recruitment process went, she sent a production team out and they interviewed a bunch of people at these known nomadic hotspots, for lack of a better word, where people would gathering spots, I guess, and got a few of them in to be in the film. And that heavily reminded me of that, of, you know, people in marginal spaces, not necessarily marginalized in the same way that they were in the Florida Project, but definitely living kind of, to the rest of American society, living in between. So there was that element, and then kind of almost like a Terrence Malick element to all the landscape and the trying to understand the American myth through that.
Yeah, that almost kind of meditative camera work where you'll just kind of let it hang on a detail or a feature.
Yeah,
that exactly. Like
it. So Donovan, did you enjoy Nomadland?
I did. You know, I think Adam said slow TV, slow movies, not pejoratively. And I definitely felt that, you know, this is not a fast film, but I did find myself, it's so easy to be distracted, especially watching a movie like this. And I found myself really locked in for like long stretches at a time, just because I was not like, you never really forget you're watching a movie, but as much as you can, like I forgot I was watching a movie. I love Frances McDormand too. So that didn't hurt anything. She's just excellent.
She was so good, and a lot is written about her ability as often the only professional actor on screen to anchor things and to let other people just speak.
Yeah.
To be talked to, and how that like kind of not legitimizes, but frames properly the other people on screen, and how much of a skill that is.
Right. Her job is reacting.
I was astounded by how much she was able to, how much she sounded like she was not giving like movie dialogue, but just the silly things people say, you know, like most of us just say the same five phrases over and over and whatever. And you don't actually often hear that because it's not very interesting to hear.
Right.
And I was astounded at her ability to seem like a real person, in the sense that like somebody I have met or I know this
person. Well, Frances McDormand gives this a very no-nonsense performance in almost every movie she does. So
yes.
I couldn't imagine anyone else doing this movie as Fern.
She gave that character, you have all the empathy for in the world once you really get the whole picture. But I also found myself frustrated by her.
Mm-hmm. A little bit. I can see that.
And it was to make, in an hour and 40-odd minutes, somebody feel really the whole gamut of emotions about her. You know, you feel, say, I don't know if we're getting into spoiler territory. Can this movie even really be spoiled?
Yeah. I think a little, maybe just a little. But let's go ahead and say if you haven't seen it. And
she wins the lottery. There, I said it.
She buys a big house.
If you haven't seen it and you're waiting to watch it, then join us. Come back after you watch it, and then maybe this conversation will make even more sense. Adam, you said you're sometimes frustrated by her character, Fern. Did that frustration color your perception of the movie at all, or your feelings about the movie?
No, because I think it was making a statement about people who live in that space. And
that's what I was thinking you were saying.
Yeah, and it's people who, from my house and my middle-class existence that all three of us live, it's easy to say to her, just stay with the nice family on the Pacific coast and get your shit together, or stay with your sister and get back on your feet in this way that we understand it. But you're also, you know, what draws you into the movie is her sense of adventure and her sense of restlessness, even though the adventure doesn't really look like, you know, the only young person in the movie she's concerned for. You know, she says, where are your parents? Do you have a girlfriend? Is there anybody back? All those kind of things. Everybody else is, and part of it is commentary on that American moment of the Great Recession and kind of like a Steinbeckian second Dust Bowl that these people are traveling around. It served the purpose, but I did find her frustrating at times.
What a great analogy that it is. This film has a lot of Steinbeckian vibes to it, what, for lack of better wording.
Yeah. It's kind of, and it's in the pride of the character too, right? Like part of that is her, I mean, every human has inherent dignity, but part of that is her dignity, right? That you respond to. But part of it is, I remember watching this film because Frances McDormand, I think this is a testament to her. Like I said, I feel like she makes you think that like this person could be real. And I remember watching this movie and thinking, it would be hard to love someone like that, just in the sense that like she might make it hard to, if she was a family member, it might be hard to love. You might love each other, but it may be hard to love and be loved.
She wakes up before breakfast and leaves.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
She doesn't leave a note. Yeah.
She's distant. You know, she's traveled. Yeah.
And such a great simple image of her and her sister together for that last moment and then walking away from one another on the sidewalk. From across, you get the shot of them across the street as if you're a neighbor.
Yeah.
You know, it was sort of interesting to me watching this movie how, maybe this is good, maybe this is bad. I think you could make an argument that for this being overly romanticized, but it was amazing to me how mostly not ugly this movie was, in the sense of like people are tired and worn out and you know, and working, but like there did not, it seems like it would be so easy to do kind of like a Dickensian, like, look at these people like living in their muck and squalor, if that makes sense. Sorry, Charles Dickens. I don't mean to throw you under the bus here. And I was struck kind of by how, if you want to put it in the best light, you know, what a humanist movie this is.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
You know, it kind of felt, you know, if you're clearly whatever headspace I was in was right for it, and I might feel differently later, but it just made me think about, you know, the folks that are our neighbors, which is everybody, and what we owe them, which is everything. I don't know.
I thought in reading some reviews for this, I thought the end of the A.O. Scott's New York Times review was really strong. I'll read a quote from it that kind of speaks to that. Zal's vision of the West includes breathtaking rock formations, ancient forests, and wide desert vistas, and also iced over parking lots, litter-strewn campsites, and cavernous, soulless workplaces. Against the backdrop of the Badlands or an Amazon fulfillment center, an individual can shrink down to almost nothing. The nomad existence is at once an acknowledgement of human impermanence and a protest against it. Fern and her friends are united as much by the experience of loss as by the spirit of adventure. So many of the stories they share are tinged with grief. It's hard to describe the mixture of sadness, wonder, and gratitude that you feel in their company. Oh, that was really good.
It is really good. It's a somber, reflective, and beautiful movie. And I'm with Donovan. I must have been in a similar headspace where this really triggered some existential thoughts for me as I was watching and immediately after, especially about what does labor mean?
Mm.
And
it's a good question.
How much of my life should I devote to labor? And I even started thinking about my job and how I don't really consider it labor. And so I'm one of the lucky ones where when I go into work, most days I feel like I would do it, I don't know, for free, but I would do it maybe if everyone was offered a universal income or something. You know, I'm speaking in communist terms perhaps, but I would probably do my job. And I felt really lucky in comparison to middle-class factory workers and these Amazon workers. And I also connected it to, you know, my mom worked in a garment plant all her life. She stitched together pants for different companies, whatever company decided to, I guess, hire them out or whatever. And that shut down before she was retirement age. She went to another garment plant. There were two in town. So she went to the other one and worked there for a few years, and then that shut down. And it wasn't long before the town itself just felt shut down.
Hmm.
It was real easy for me to compare what her, by the way, I worked there in a couple of summers, two summers, one summer. So I know what the job was like. And I couldn't help but compare that Amazon factory work, that Amazon warehouse work, to what she did. It's pretty much the same. It's just repetitive, droll, meaningless work.
I felt watching, especially the earlier stuff, because it kind of starts out in the Amazon warehouse.
Yeah.
How it just feels dehumanizing.
It does.
To watch that. You know, there's a great scene where, and it doesn't take too long, but it's just kind of showing what Frances McDormand, what her work is. And it's really just doing the same thing over and over. And you look at that and you're like, if it was cheaper to replace these folks with machines, they would. Like, their humanity has no value in this equation.
I thought the same thing. I thought, how soon before they get somebody to put the tape on the boxes and print the labels and tape it on?
And then, so I did like that a lot of kind of like what Adam said in the A.O. Scott review, seemed like the movie was interested in giving faces and humanity to folks that maybe we don't, you know, you kind of, who pays attention to the people cleaning their toilets? I mean, honestly, I don't think most people do.
I do because it's me. I'm cleaning my toilet.
Well, you know what I mean. Like someone puts on a, have you, I mean, you've probably been in a, in an institution, right? And especially something, maybe college or whatever, and somebody comes by dressed as maintenance staff. Do people even look at them in the eyes? Not really, you know? And I thought it was interesting too, how, you know, it was definitely kind of like, we're in the West, right? You're on your own, you're by yourself. But there wasn't a lot of, the wrong word is popping into my head, not individualism didn't seem overly valorized, because it seemed that she was constantly coming into communities of which I thought was kind of interesting. If I had to guess how this movie was going to go, I'd say, oh, it's someone on her own, especially kind of falling into tropes of the West. But it really seemed like someone who was more in alternate communities, and sometimes in communities that were more loving and responsible towards each other than, say, you would be with you or I would be with our next door neighbor.
Yeah, like when she goes to the big meetup in Arizona, which I've driven past that place that they were meeting, Quartzsite.
Huh.
That is, you want to talk about the fringes of civilization? That's where that is. I mean, it is just like shockingly out there in a way that those of us who grew up further east, maybe it's not in our imagination. It's just wild. But, you know, even you expect this guy who runs a YouTube channel about living in a van to be like you said, Donovan, like a rugged individualist, right? But instead, yeah, it's like this community get together where they all learn how to survive, and they give each other things that they need, or they swap items or whatever. And the only time that she's threatened with, you have to learn how to do this, is when she doesn't have the spare tire.
Yeah.
And her friend dresses her down and says, I think it was more to establish the stakes of her lifestyle than it was to say anything about individualism. Is like, you could die out here. If something went wrong, you're just dead. There is no second chance.
Which, that character's name was Swanky, and her story was deeply affecting, just very emotionally resonant for me.
I thought hers was a good balance to, it was, I totally agree with what you said, but it makes you think, you know, ultimately she died alone, probably in a van in Alaska, and it was probably an awful way to go. And you kind of wonder about the trade-off between, living that, seeing these beautiful things one last time versus, you know, there are material reasons to stay within the lines that society has provided.
I really, was thinking about what you just said, reminded me of something I was thinking about in context with that too, which was that I think that by not too unreasonable stretch of the imagination, you can say just about every major character in this movie is somebody that society has failed, basically, right? Like society has failed them. There doesn't seem to be much anger, more resignation than anything else.
Yeah.
Like folks are kind of like, like this is just like literally my lot in life. It would be a different movie if everyone was angry, but I did think that was really interesting, right? Because there is kind of like, is it Lily May? Like Linda May gets her benefits and, you know, can live without working all the time, but she's going to work until she dies.
Hey, I swear to you, I worked with that lady at the garment plant.
She kind of steals the show whenever she's on screen.
Oh, she was great. And that's what made me think, because she seems so happy and at peace, but at the same time, like there is that kind of underlying sadness, right? Like,
yeah,
other people. And every time we see a house, right? Like it's huge, and it's like other people have more than they need, and this woman is going to clean bathrooms until she literally can't do it anymore. My only question too is, how did that guy pay for his operation? Does he have health insurance?
Yeah, good question.
But I thought that was going to be more of a thing than it was.
He just kind of skates through that.
I've got two questions and we'll wrap. First one, what did you make of the final scenes of Fern visiting her old home? Or what did that do for you?
That was kind of crushing on two levels. One, obviously, you learn more about the reasons that she struggled to leave the town forever, even after it kind of crumbled up. You know, it's asking questions about the dignity and value of work. You know, her husband, she remembers him loving what he did, loving the people around him. And, you know, they, when it's shown without that light, the light of community and their marriage and this life that they had together projected onto it, that is a sad, sad landscape that she goes back to. And it's only been referenced lovingly. And then when she actually sees it again, it's so brutal.
It's like, what was the love that you gave for your work and your community at the end of the day for, right? Not that I'm saying that was wrong, but it basically given to the folks that owned the, was it a gypsum plant?
Yeah.
That don't, they, you know, it, they don't give anything back to you in return. Not really.
And setting up that he didn't have, they never had kids. And his family's dead. And if she moves on from there, then did he ever really exist? And you start, as she drives off into the sunset, you start wondering the same thing about her.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sad.
There was a moment, and watching the ending made me remember it. And I think it's just something in her line delivery where she's talking about when her husband was dying. And somebody says, well, you probably did take care of him. And she kind of stops. She's like, yeah, I did. I took great care of him. And it just seems like she's maybe not proud, but satisfied with that. And I was thinking about that moment as she's kind of walking through the house and seeing the nothing, right? Like, is it enough, right? When she's gone, is it enough?
And my second question to wrap, Chloe Zhao was born in China. She spent a lot of time in America. What do you guys make of her putting such a cohesive, beautiful film together on the American dream?
I mean, I thought it was the fact that it didn't really have like a plot. I mean, I've seen it called episodic, where she's moving from gathering to gathering or job to job. I don't know, the word impressionistic probably gets used too much when we're talking about art, but it was a meditation, like Donovan said, to start the conversation. And I thought it was great. Her perspective was so nuanced and so did so much without saying it. I thought it was really phenomenal. And I just kept thinking how many times on tour, like touring musicians feel like they're like one bad set of circumstances away from being in the position that a lot of these people find themselves. And you're kind of interacting with a lot of these scenarios. And I've always wondered, you pass somebody in a pilot or something, like, what's their story? What are they up to? Because that's really, you want to talk about what America is. There's a whole version of it out there that is huge, that doesn't fit into anybody who's maybe, for lack of a better term, landlocked, you know, to their understanding of what the country is, even though the myth is always go west, stay moving, all these things. It's like, well, this is the result of that.
Yeah, it's a perfect setting, and I think a plot would have stripped it of its nomadic feel anyway. So
agreed.
It was a good, solid, solid movie. One of the best I've seen in a while, maybe, I would say.
If this turned up some Oscar talk, I would not be surprised or disappointed.
Surprising.
Yeah, that feels deserving.
After thinking and talking about this, like, my brain keeps bumping up again, and she's directing a Marvel movie, and it just shatters. What is
that
going to
be? We'll see how that turns out.
It's either going to be Marvel product or it's going to be great.
Yeah, well, or both. Okay, well, that is it for this week. We'll be back next Tuesday, and we'll have a discussion about Lord knows what. In the meantime, subscribe to us, and you won't miss a thing. We will talk to you all then.